Hey, this is This Week in Self-Hosted. I am your host, Ethan. Today, I am joined by a special guest co-host, Elliot Courant, the developer of the recently launched budgeting application, Monitor. Elliot, thanks a bunch for joining me. Do you mind giving everyone an introduction to yourself and Monitor and chatting a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Ethan. I'm Elliot. I've been working on Monitor for about 4 years now. Starting back when Simple Finance was shut down as part of an acquisition into a larger bank. And Simple had a way of budgeting that allowed you to basically always see what you could actually spend or what you could actually budget and use, rather than just seeing what kind of categories you had spent or had allocated for. And that made a world of a difference in my finances at the time, and ultimately made it possible for my wife and I to buy our first house, as well as other things. And so I wanted to recreate that, and I've been using Monitor myself over the past 4 years as I've been working on it.
Wow. So it's interesting because you say you've been working on it for 4 years. I know you just recently launched it, just a few weeks ago, right? Publicly launched it. But it's obviously more mature than it's a mature application for having just launched because it looks great. It looks modern, and it does not look like the first go around that I see in a lot of software that crosses my desk. So what has that 4 years looked like for you?
Three or four complete UI rewrites because I didn't like the way it looked or I didn't like the way it worked. And you could see that a bit in the Git history. The repo itself, even though it's essentially just me contributing to this in my free time, has almost 6,000 commits, a bit more than that.
Oh.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's gone through several iterations, but there's still, I guess, it's a case of reading your own work. I still see a lot of rough edges and things that I would like to polish off and improve, but I'm glad that it portrays that level of polish.
Yeah, that's fair. I think I rebrand some of my things on my site like every month. I can never settle on things. So I completely sympathize with you as far as the UI rewrites go. Why a budgeting application?
I was working on an inventory management app with some colleagues before I was working on Monitor in our free time. And we were going to try and do the startup venture type thing, but it didn't capture as much of my attention as this did, with how having a good budgeting app actually helped me. And so this felt a lot more meaningful and engaging to me. Which is why, I mean, how many personal projects end up lasting even 4 years? Right. Most of the time, a personal project will end up falling by the wayside or something like that. But somehow this one has not.
Yeah. So is it fair to say this would be a self-hosted alternative for something like You Need a Budget? I feel like that's what people are most familiar with. That or something like Mint, maybe.
Yeah, and Mint isn't around anymore, I don't believe, but Monarch Money and YNAB are both like excellent budgeting apps, but both have like far different approaches than what I personally find useful. And I'm learning more and more that there are like excellent budgeting apps out there that provide this sort of envelope budgeting. Actual Budget is one of them. And there are some other ones that I don't think are self-hostable, though, but are out there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And I think the one thing that sets Monitor aside, or one of the things, because there are a lot of great things about it, it has Plaid integration right now. And so I think when I look at a lot of the common criticisms for self-hosted budgeting apps, the lack of automatic transaction syncing and import is huge because a lot of people need that to keep up with their budgeting. And so Monitor has that figured out. We were chatting a little bit beforehand. I think Actual is on the way to getting there. I think it has experimental support, or if it's not experimental, it's fairly new. And someone's probably going to correct me on this in the comments, and that's okay.
Yeah, I believe Actual is going through someone to get access to MX. Kind of like Stripe has a functionality now where you can do this as well, but they're really just white labeling MX and some other providers. And I think that Actual is doing the same thing, but it's the way they're doing it is actually really accessible for self-hosted users, because they're the way they are charging for that API is like $1 a month or something like that. I don't know the exact price. It's very reasonable for this access that normally is very hard to get. Getting production credentials for Plaid can be difficult for an individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all fair. But with that being said, I do want to shift into the news side a little bit. But again, Elliot, thanks a bunch for joining. I'm excited to see how Monitor evolves and grows over the next several months now that it's launched in public. Are you getting a lot of feedback from people?
Yeah, the feedback and support that I've been getting has been fantastic. A lot more people are interested in self-hosting it than I originally expected. But the feedback and what people want out of it and the things that I need to work on next are becoming very, very clear. And I love that.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks again for joining me. I know we talked about you have quite a self-hosted setup at your house with a pretty beefy server rack. So I'm anxious to get some of your thoughts on the rest of the content we're going to discuss this episode.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I'm going to flip back to the newsletter and we're going to jump into the news. Now, Elliot, I know we were chatting again before we started recording a little bit about social media, and your presence there is lacking a little bit. And there's nothing wrong with that. Unfortunately, this week, I'm going to chat a little bit about social media within the world of self-hosting. So I think this is going to be a good having to explain it to you and hopefully also explain it well for some of the people who are listening who might not be familiar with some of the stuff going on with self-hosted social media. Does that sound good?
Absolutely.
Perfect. So first thing going on this week, Mastodon, which is arguably the largest activity pub platform, announced they are shifting over complete control of the project to a European nonprofit organization. I think that's great. We've seen some larger open source projects move in that direction. I know Home Assistant went there. I think Matrix has gone there now. So it's really cool seeing Mastodon also setting this precedent for other open source projects. And really taking that step to say, hey, we don't want to become the next Facebook or Instagram or whatever platforms are out there where things like algorithms and all the stuff that come along with being a for-profit company tends to degrade the user experience. So for people who are making the jump to Mastodon or to other platforms, hopefully this is reassuring. And the timeliness of this probably couldn't be better, because there's also a lot of stuff happening with other federated platforms. Elliot, you and I are both US-based, so I know we're both familiar with some of the chaos that's just going on in several facets of a US civilian's life. Two things I think have been big. Meta has been in the news a lot lately. Meta, the owner of Facebook and Instagram, they've been in the news for, I feel like, a million things in the last month, more so than I've seen them in the last year.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things they've been caught with is actually blocking links to one of their Fediverse competitors, which is PixelFed. PixelFed is an Instagram alternative, so it's very similar. You take photos, you share them with people, they can comment, they can share, like, whatever. You have a timeline of photos, but it's kind of like the sanitized version of Instagram, if you'll call it that. Meta was caught blocking links to PixelFed, and so that caused a stir. I think they came back and said it was a mistake and they reversed it, and so it's not the case anymore. I don't know that I believe them necessarily. And I'm sure you probably don't either.
No, I mean, wasn't there a, maybe this was a meme, but wasn't there a thing about a huge antitrust lawsuit for all the FANG companies a little bit a few years ago? Maybe I'm misremembering, but that seems to kind of align with that, doesn't it?
Yes, that sounds about right. I think they're all just maybe be afraid of becoming the next MySpace. Although I always love the meme that Tom has it so good. MySpace Tom made a great platform, made out well, and is just living his life peacefully somewhere and not trying to mingle with people's lives anymore.
He's got it right.
Yeah, he absolutely did. The other topic I wanted to talk about related to self-hosted social media is a new TikTok alternative launched called Loops, which is also created by the same developer as PixelFed, actually. Loops is much, much newer than PixelFed is, but it's still a pretty capable platform and a very capable TikTok alternative. And so that's gained a lot of popularity this week because TikTok, as we all know, is on the verge of being banned or maybe not being banned. I feel like every other news article in my newsfeed is, here's why TikTok will be banned. Here's why it's not going to be banned. But people are looking for alternatives. We mentioned Red Note, was it? That's the other app people are flocking to.
Yeah, it's extremely popular right now, but there's a lot of drama around it.
So that's the big one. And then Loops is also gaining popularity. So it's kind of been cool to see PixelFed and Loops gain some traction this week, both for events out of their control, but also just kind of sharing the limelight with Mastodon and their big announcement. It's cool to see that. I think someone on my Mastodon feed mentioned, for the first time ever, Mastodon crossed beneath the 70% threshold of Fediverse software installed on people's machines. So people who are hosting Fediverse software, overwhelmingly, Mastodon has been the more popular platform. But you can kind of see how these other platforms are gaining traction as well now, especially this week. And so Mastodon has become slightly less popular, but still has the lion's share. Shifting away from the Fediverse for just a little bit, I know I could talk about it forever. I am obsessed with the Fediverse. Unraid also had some news this past week. And I'll say this past week, but it actually should have been caught in last week's newsletter. I'm not sure how I missed it, but they released a fairly new operating system update, version 7, which comes with some pretty big things like ZFS snapshots. I know there's now a built-in Tailscale integration, which is...
Yeah, Unraid is absolutely a fantastic tool. And if you're getting into home labs and you want to just host something yourself, you go onto YouTube or you go onto Reddit and you search for home lab stuff, Unraid will probably be on the first page no matter what, there with TrueNAS and probably Home Assistant. I have not personally tried Unraid before, but I've heard good things. I really love Ceph when it comes to storage, because the ability to do online upgrades or things like that to the servers that I'm running, or not having to kill Plex because I'm adding or swapping out drives, is really, really cool, even if I have to take down a whole server. So
yeah, that's great. Ceph is honestly one of those things I don't think I have. I recognized it when you brought it up, but I'm not familiar with it otherwise, and I'm very intrigued by it. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. When I started self-hosting, I actually started with Unraid. It was kind of my gateway into the rest of the self-hosting world. So it's interesting to hear you say that. I'd be interested to hear if any of the listeners or viewers of the show are also Ceph users. And to be honest, I think I would have pronounced it Ceph before I talked to you. I would have mispronounced it.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. I hope that I am. I've been using it for several years, and I'm very happy with it. I'd love to see if other people are also using it for home labs, or if it really is just a lot of like research campuses and things like that using it for massive storage.
Yeah, it's a good question. I should probably incorporate into my... I run a user survey annually as well. I should probably try and incorporate that to gauge user interest and adoption with some of the listeners and viewers here.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know.
So I want to shift into software updates and new software. I know that's my favorite section of the show, and when it comes to news, I tend to ramble a lot. So jumping down into software updates, I have a couple here that I wanted to talk through. There's, as usual, there's a ton going on, a lot of notable updates. Again, I think it's just that time of the year where it's cold outside. People, or at least in certain parts of the world, it's cold outside. People are spending time inside, maybe more so than usual, and we're seeing a lot of things come through. A couple things that stuck out to me: Forge Joe, which is kind of like the successor to Gati, which is still a project, but they were kind of wrapped up in some licensing drama a couple of years back, and Forge Joe is a successor. They had a pretty large update. It was essentially version 10 for them. And there are a lot of little changes. So I've mentioned some here in the newsletter and people can read it, but I would encourage everyone to click through to the actual release notes and read some of the things that they have going on, because there's a lot that's new. But also notable is, I think this is the last release they have where it'll be easy for people to transition from Giti to Forge Joe. So if you're a Giti user and you know that at some point you want to make the jump to Forge Joe, now is the time to do it before they drop their version 11, which I have no idea how frequently these major updates come. But you'll want to do it before then. So maybe mark it on your calendar. Elliot, you said you're a GitLab user, correct?
Yeah, I'm using GitLab at the moment for my personal home lab, but they've been adding a lot of features around AI stuff that I don't need, or other types of things, as well as continuing to raise the price for even self-hosted licenses. So Giti or Forge Joe look more and more attractive every day, especially given that they're a lot lighter weight. GitLab is extremely heavy to run and requires either a lot of services or just seemingly a lot of hardware.
Yeah, I think I see that is typically the common complaint, that it just takes a lot of resources to run. But on the other side, I think it has a little more functionality and capabilities than maybe Forge Joe and Giti do.
It has been around for a very long time. So,
yep, that'll do it. That's fair. The other thing I wanted to mention, and I'm going to kick it off to you, Elliot, to talk about a new piece of software you wanted to chat about, is there's a software application called XPipe. Disclaimer, they sponsor and have sponsored the application directory I have on my website. They are not sponsoring this show or this particular episode. I wanted to talk about it because they had a pretty big update, and I think it's a really cool application. It's essentially a connection hub for all of your servers. So they pitch themselves as your entire server infrastructure at your fingertips. So it's not necessarily one of those, hey, we're going to streamline all the deployment stuff for you. It's more, hey, you probably have multiple servers. You have a lot of infrastructure that might be different in many ways. So let us help you bring them together to make it more manageable and easy to work through and do things quickly without having to jump from instance to instance to instance. So they had a pretty big update. It was version 14 this week. They had some big changes regarding Teams and how you manage identities across different connections. Again, people are using this to manage multiple servers or machines. And so the identity from one might be the same. It might be the same from one to the next, or it might not. And they also had some cool encryption capabilities when it comes to backing some of this up to like a Git repository or something. So if you're not familiar with XPipe, if you haven't checked it out, I would heavily recommend it. With that being said, Elliot, I'm going to kick it off to you. Talk a little bit about some of the new software that stuck out to you in this week's newsletter.
Yeah, the Civit AI one stuck out to me at a glance because I had a colleague who used to work there, and Civit is doing a lot of stuff with AI, and I hope that they succeed, and I hope that they do well. But seeing more of that kind of stuff in the community is just, it's awesome to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is really cool. Someone actually emailed me and was like, hey, I've developed this. I just launched it. You can see it's pretty fresh. So hopefully some people check it out and get some attention.
Yeah, what else? There is a lot going on all the time. Flickr emigration tool. Reformat Flickr libraries to import into Imic, PhotoPrism, and PixelFed. That's really cool. Imic is one of the greatest apps that I've seen, and it's one that I still need to try out. But seeing more and more people build stuff like this to get things into that, to replace Google Photos, Apple Photos, I'm not sure all of what the apps are, but they're, I don't know. I hear Lewis Rossman talk about Imic a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, this is cool. I feel like photo libraries are, everyone just has their own way of managing their photos. And so when you're ready to make the jump, be it from Flickr or Google Photos, I think the difficulty is always, how do I make that as painless as possible? I have photos going back 20 years, and you know, some of them are tagged, some of them have albums. And so to your point, it's really cool to see things like this come along, because it's just more encouragement for people to pick up things like those platforms that we've talked about. By the way, PixelFed is mentioned there. I know we chatted about that during the Fediverse stuff as well. It's cool to see that lumped in with some of the other photo software as well.
Yeah, I love that the community is it's not just the people working on Imic and PixelFed and all of those who are getting behind those things. The community is building tools around being able to migrate to that to make it easier to not use these big tools that might not have your interests in mind.
Yep, absolutely. And I want to pivot back. I know we talked about Civit AI a little bit. I know you had mentioned Lingar sticking out to you.
Yeah.
This wasn't a new piece of, this isn't, it's relatively new, but I had it in because I added it to my directory and I always have a listing of apps I've added. I think I had it in the new software section a couple of weeks ago, but let's talk about it.
Yeah. So this stuck out to me just because the radar or sonar suite of tools have been very well maintained by the community, but the subtitles are something that are really, really hard to get right. And the idea of, oh, well, I have subtitles for this movie of mine that I've ripped or something like that, and I want to make those subtitles available for, you know, maybe someone who doesn't speak English, or maybe someone who does. Maybe it's a foreign film. I'm not sure. But the AI that's available today has gotten so good at doing these translations that it might be better than some of the subtitles you can find online. And that's not easy to find good subtitles. I would love to see something that takes this and combines it with a speech-to-text tool and then translation. Because getting good subtitles in any language is really hard for some media. And I'm learning more and more about that from people who like to use subtitles.
Right. So you're saying Lingar relies on having the subtitle to start with.
I think so.
There's like, you need that initial step where you might not even start with the subtitle, and how do you get it there? That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause then, I mean, once you have that base subtitle, then translating it maybe becomes easier. I believe it requires the initial subtitle file to start with, and then it translates it. But I might be wrong.
No, I think that makes sense. And just reading the README here in the GitHub repo, that's exactly like, looks like exactly what it's doing. So
yeah,
really cool project. Recommend everyone checking it out for sure. I'm going to go through a little bit of a speed round myself here with some new software. I joked with you, Elliot, ahead of time that I was going to start a new segment that was just interesting software names of new software projects, because every week it feels like there are one or two that make me chuckle or just make me scratch my head. In the last year, there are like two or three that I will never forget. And maybe I can talk about them in a future episode. But this week we had EigenFocus, which actually looks like a very capable Kanban, like time task tracker application. The screenshots look great. It's very like modern, but minimal. I'm very intrigued by it. But I immediately was like, okay, this is one of those software projects that has a German name of some sort. And so I looked it up, and Eigen means own, like O-W-N. So maybe it's like your own focus, your own personal focus. Then I also saw it's a C++ library for like mathematical operations or something. And so I was like, oh, is this like a C++ application? And it doesn't look like it. So
interesting.
Developer of EigenFocus, if you're listening, please solve this for us. What is the driver behind the name for this? Any guesses, Elliot?
I'm not sure. Maybe they're trying to avoid the hoarder situation.
Yes. Yes, that's true. And actually, let's come back to that in a little bit, because I want to make sure we talk about that. I think that's probably a good place to end. Spinning back to my speed round here quickly, UBS was the other one. This is a simple and lightweight file uploader. There's not much to it. I don't even think it has screenshots in the repository, but I called it out because I call it UBS. Sorry, it's USB upload server for bullshit. And apologies for the French, for anyone who might be offended by that language. I just love just the frank and honest name for the software. So I think that I found that interesting. And then This other one, which I almost feel like I'm cheating on you a little bit, Elliot, mentioning, it's a finance tracker. It stands for what you get is what you have.
That's excellent.
Which is excellent. And I feel like really encaptures the what captures what the application is trying to do. It is pronounced WYGIWYH, if you were curious. You are not supposed to spell that out every time you use it. So WYGIWYH. Although when I look at it like phonetically, it feels like the letters might be jumbled a little bit, but I'm running with it. I won't question it. Those are the three applications that stuck out to me in terms of funny names. And then the other application that stuck out to me is this app called Any App Start. It is an application for taking a multitude of container or system services and just giving you an interface to perform basic functions like start, stop, restart, view logs are all on here. You can see it supports Docker, systemd, VMs, a whole slew of things. But what I really wanted to call out is this project is actually developed by a GitHub user by the name of Aceberg. Their actual name is Andrew, if you go to their GitHub profile. And I recognize every time I see a project pop up, I can almost always identify that it's a project by this user. You can see they have a lot of different things. From as someone who sees a lot of software come across their desk, I recognize all these. I've covered them all before. And they're all really good at doing a very specific thing. And they're all similar to each other. Like I can almost look at the icons themselves and say, I can tell those are coming from the same place. If you look at the interfaces, it feels like they're all semi-related. And so I wanted to call that out. I talked a little bit about James Reed and Oliveton last week, another developer who I can almost always identify when something he develops come across. And this is another similar project and developer. So I recommend if you're looking for basic functionality, maybe if you're starting and stopping stuff frequently on the go and don't want to try and remote SSH into your server or something, this might be something to check out. That's all the software updates and new software we're going to talk about. I want to end on a comment you just made a few minutes ago, Elliot, with Hoarder. And I'm going to let you explain to everyone what's going on. I want to chat a little bit about it beforehand. But can you give everyone a primer on what's happening? And then as a developer, I'd also love to hear your thoughts on it.
So as I understand it, and I've not used Hoarder, the app, in this context myself, but someone built an app using the name Hoarder, just spelled as it would be in English. No odd spelling like you would find even with Monitor. And evidently, that very plain English word, someone feels violates the trademark on a word they're arguing is similar, spelled H-O-R-D-R, which is apparently, according to them, a competing app. And they received a cease and desist from this competing app in regards to it. And this being an open source project, or at the very least, just a personal project that someone has worked on, what power do they have to fight a cease and desist like that? It's mm-hmm. very much just, it strikes me as just abuse of that system to be a bully.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sorry, I was trying to bring this Reddit thread up and I brought another one I was chuckling at, someone trying to figure out how to automate their espresso maker, which I probably include in the newsletter because I was laughing at it when I saw it this week. But this is the Reddit thread that the Hoarder developers chatting in it a little bit. They have some screenshots of this other Hoarder app. And it's funny because I'm not a lawyer. I don't want to jump to conclusions. You can very much see a lot of, I think, the Reddit armchair experts chime in. And of course, there are 50 different opinions on what's happening and how the developer should react. I think they should probably seek legal advice. Like, that's the one thing I do know. But even the developer comes to the conclusion, like, he's not sure if it's a patent troll or someone that's just trying to take advantage of the situation, or if it's real, just because there's that, like, that history just isn't there online. And so it's hard to figure out what exactly is happening. So,
yeah, it's impossible to tell without some kind of counsel who's familiar with how those patent trolls or trademark trolls work. I mean, there's so much there that happens behind the scenes that the average person isn't going to see or know even to look for. It's very difficult to navigate without that, which makes it even more, why are you doing this to just this developer who's just trying to make something?
Right. And I want to tell people, hey, support your developers, do what you can. But I don't know, maybe there is a case by this other Hoarder app that the Hoarder Read It Later that we're all familiar with that launched in 2024. You know, maybe they could have done their homework a little better. I hate to think that, and I would rather give them the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, I don't necessarily want to tell everyone to go give bad reviews to this other app. Because it feels like to your point, we just all need more information before we can really come to our own conclusions.
Yeah.
So it's super intriguing. I will say I love following stuff like this. I'll be anxious to hear where they settle. Hoarder is a great application. I've talked about it a lot in my content. So I hope they're fine no matter where they land. I'm sure if they do have to change their name, they'll still land on their feet. I know the community will be really good about, you know, making sure everyone is aware of what changes might be coming. But best of luck to them. Again, if there's something we could do, I would offer my services, but I don't think there is anything I can do.
Yeah.
So with that being said, I do think that's a good place to stop, Elliot. Again, I'm really appreciative that you joined me today on the episode. Really cool to see Monitor and its launch. I wish you all the success with it. Again, I'm going to be keeping an eye on it. I'll include major updates in the newsletter. I'm anxious to see it grow. If people want to connect with you and Monitor online after this episode, is there somewhere they should go or somewhere they can reach out? I'm happy to include some links in the video and podcast description.
Yeah, I can include a link to my GitHub profile as well as a link to the monitor repository on GitHub. There is a Discord server, which has recently gotten several members. I'm constantly looking in there for feedback or conversation and stuff. If people want to reach out, if they have ideas or thoughts or just feedback, I'm happy to listen and help me decide what I need to work on next. Yeah. Thank you very much for having me, Ethan. This has been a great experience.
Yeah, perfect. Again, thanks for joining. Hopefully I can have you back soon. And I look forward to your new Mastodon, PixelFed, and Loops accounts in the coming weeks as well.
If I have to sign up for social media, that's the social media to sign up for at the very least. So
there you go. Exactly. So cool. Well, thanks again. And thanks everyone for listening. Have a great weekend and happy self-hosting.